Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry. Clean feel all day.
Live.
Starting to really work.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
No one thinks anything of us.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
And who in this here national radio mosh pit has been saying over and over and over again?
Rich Eisen. Earlier on the show, host of Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. Coming up, Yahoo Sports columnist Dan Wetzel, co-host of Good Morning Football, Jason McCourty, from the Showtime drama City on a Hill, actor Kevin Bacon.
In.
And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Jason McCourty, my new NFL Network colleague, will be joining us. He is going to be joining the breakfast table of Good Morning Football starting on Monday. And he will be joining us on the program. Is there any way that I can guarantee that I have the right McCourty when he calls in? Is that wrong to even ask?
Kind of.
Will he give up every secret the Patriots have ever had? What do you think?
He was only there for a short amount of time, but it's possible.
Oh, I'm mixing up my McCourty.
You're mixing up your McCourty. Devin has been there forever. Jason.
Jason was there for a couple of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, won one of the Super Bowls, but bounced around. Tennessee, Cleveland.
Well, that's all you got to do is just hang out for a little bit. You're going to win a Super Bowl.
Odds are you're going to get a Super Bowl. It's like being in Alabama. Like, if you just be there for 4 years, you'll probably
that's
win
how
one
works.
Or two.
Yeah, okay.
That's how it works.
Very good. Kevin Bacon is going to be, speaking of degrees of separation, he is going to be in studio hour number three. Can't wait to chat with him. We've got an NFL What's More Likely. Later on in this hour, TJ's Big Ass Grab Bag involves what, sir? What
do you have for me? It's baseball related. Just looking to the second half of the season.
What's baseball related?
Well, it's about the second half of the season.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like pulling teeth over here.
Well, I mean, you asked the question and I immediately gave you the answer.
You said it's baseball related. I'm like, well, what about? You said second half of the season. Oh, so you're giving your top five things you're looking forward to in the second half of the season?
Or, okay, it'll be the top.
What is it?
The grab bag today, if you care to stay and watch, will be the top five teams heading into the second half of the season. Spoiler alert.
So, in other words, how far up the list will be TJ Jefferson's New York Metropolitan?
Well, they're in the top five. I think everyone would agree with that, right?
Homer.
Very good. That'll be later on in this hour.
Sorry, I had something in my throat.
844-204-RICH.
The Red Sox will not be on the list for long, okay? Just so you know.
One of our favorites who covers sports and brings a unique insight every single time he hits the keyboard is Yahoo Sports columnist Dan Wetzel, back here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. How you been, Dan?
I'm good, Rich. How you been?
I'm doing fine. Do we call college football professional sports yet? What do you think? I mean, Kirby Smart's paid like a professional football coach. We've seen more and more name, image, and likeness deals of players where they're making more money than rookies at their position in the NFL. Have we reached the point yet, Dan? What do you think?
I don't know why we wouldn't at this point. There's virtually no decision made that has anything to do with amateurism other than to keep claiming it so you don't have to pay taxes. It's a pretty good little bit. But, the decisions consistently get more and more bottom line, particularly in the way the television networks really run the sport now. It's a desire for Fox to Fox is literally sitting in on the Big Ten's TV negotiations with other broadcast partners, and the decisions now aren't just in the same way SEC and the ESPN. It's not just hey, we add USC and UCLA and our league gets stronger. We decimate a competitor in the Pac-12, and via supply and demand, we're even more valuable because we've cut supply and increased our demand in our product. So it's consistently more cutthroat business wise. It's how are we going to design this playoff to maximize the profits of us, maybe not improve the entire sport and all that. There's just very little going on at the upper levels, let alone the players making a little bit of cash that suggests it's anything but the NFL.
So what's the next step? I'll ask you the same question I asked Pete Thamel, our colleague at ESPN, yesterday. Is the USC, UCLA joining the Big Ten, even though the governor of this great state of California seems to think UCLA shouldn't go, it seems, or needs some reasoning as to why the UC system needs to be subsumed by Big Ten football. Is that the last step? Is that the last big kaboom this year, and we're going to just play football and see how it all plays out, or there's still more to come right now?
Well, there's two big things that have to come up. One would be if Notre Dame decided to join a conference, and that isn't going to happen anytime soon. Notre Dame wants to see what the playoff will look like, and as long as there is access in a large number of at-large spots for Notre Dame to make the college football playoff, then they should be fine. They also want to see what they can get on the market with the renewal of their NBC deal. As long as that number isn't incredibly behind, and it shouldn't, the Big Ten and SEC. It doesn't have to be the same, but if it's in the $60 or $70 million a year range while Big Ten schools are making $100 maybe, that's enough for them. So would Notre Dame jump? Notre Dame's not going to make that decision right now. They don't have to. They're always going to be desired. They're the belle of the ball. The only other thing would be what happens with the Big 12 and the Pac-10. Right now, the Pac-10 and Pac-12, now Pac-10, but whatever, is yes. saying we're going to stick together. We're going to go out into market and negotiate our deal, and we're not going to merge with the Big 12. As long as that's the same, then this will go on fairly similarly. But if the Big 12 can convince particularly the Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, any of those schools, hey, you're better off with us. We're more stable, then the Pac-12 could fall apart. But if the remaining 10 Pac-12 schools want to stick together, then I think we'll hit a little bit of a calm for the time being. But those are really the only two things that are going to happen. The ACC can't really move. The SEC isn't looking to expand anymore. The Big Ten is pretty happy at 16 until they find out what Notre Dame wants to do. So I think it's all about, does the Pac-12 stay together? And if they don't, how many schools jump to the Big 12? But my guess is it'll remain kind of five major conferences for a little while.
Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports columnist here on the Rich Eisen Show. So let's then get to the college football playoff, because a couple of times you've mentioned folks want to see how it shakes out, how that shakes out. Certainly Notre Dame being the most interested party on all of that. Who's deciding it? What's the decision-making process on what it's going to be, and what's the time frame? And because I would imagine that will be the impetus to create more super leagues, super conferences, and things like that. Wouldn't you agree?
It could be or it could not be. It's what the structure. So they originally signed a 12-year deal on this is the college football playoff, and it's four teams, and it's just the four best teams, four at-large bids, if you will. And that ends after the 2026 season. There is no rollover. So something new has to be created for after 2026, which is four seasons away. They had a plan, and right now they had a plan in place to go to 12 teams with six automatic bids. So all the top six conference champions every year would get a bid. So you'd have your SEC, Big Ten, ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12, plus your really good Boise State team or a big Mid-American Conference team or someone from the America, whatever it would be, they would also get an automatic bid. So it was a real lifeline to those smaller leagues. And then you'd still have six at-large spots, which helps the SEC get two, three, four teams in, Notre Dame get in, multiple teams. So that plan was there. But under the old rules, a single conference could say, we don't like that, and the deal would not get changed because they were trying to alter the current deal. So the ACC, Pac-12, and Big Ten blocked it, much to the disastrous decision by the ACC and the Pac-12, because right now they'd have automatic access to the playoff if they had taken that deal in January. Going forward, the new deal is just a new deal. The SEC and the Big Ten have the majority of the big-time schools. They can essentially create whatever playoff they want and say, this is how we're doing it. You're either in and you're out. Because you can't really have a playoff without the SEC and the Big Ten. So if they sit there and say, we want an 18 playoff with all at-large spots, even though we're going to get 6-7 of those spots every year, Notre Dame might say, hey, we're in. Everyone else is basically going to have to go along with it, or they're going to have to try to create their own playoff. It'll kill their recruiting. So this is the going forward, this decision is almost essentially whatever the SEC and Big Ten want. And that's not good for the Pac-12, the Big 12, or the ACC, let alone the Mountain West and all of that. So it's a precarious spot. The SEC is going to really drive this boat, but the Big Ten too. So it's a weird process because you're going to create a system for all of college football, but not all of college football is really going to have a say anymore.
Well, I mean, I think what ends up happening, Dan, you tell me, is that you've got 16 teams in the Big Ten right now, right? And the SEC's got this same number once, Oklahoma?
16.
Okay, so that's 16. And so you could just stop it right there, in a way, normally, because...
You know what else has 16 teams? The AFC.
And the NFC.
And the NFC.
Correct. And then and those
and they
two...
they have their own playoff.
Right, they do. Yeah. And then they meet in what's called the Super Bowl. I think you've heard of it.
Yes,
but college,
somewhat popular event.
Yes, but college football has
and
more
and profitable.
Yes, but college football has obviously more teams than just those 32 of interest, and not all those 32 are terrific, just like the NFL as well. So what I'm thinking is you create another situation where one 16-team conference exists and another 16-team conference exists. Everybody has their own playoffs, and you have a four-team playoff situation based off of those 64. And some of those 64, you make a deal that can get relegated out, relegated in, things of that nature. And everybody's going to have to race for those 64 seats. And that's going to be a free for all. That's going to come based on maybe the accelerant is the name, image, and likeness deals that some of these teams can offer, or some conferences will close up their ranks to have their own NIL rules because they're not waiting around for anybody else, and some might be more of interest to others, and that's how players are going to get there, and that's how this is all going to go. I have no idea who's going to run it. Maybe it's Sankey. I don't know. But what do you think of that idea, Dan? What do you think?
The reason that's not a bad idea, by the way, and that would be a good solution, but that would mean the SEC and Big Ten would be ceding equal power to everybody else, and right now they control. Plus, where does Notre Dame fit in on that? But it's certainly possible there are three or four conferences. Anything is on the table at this point, and that's why getting rid of that playoff plan in January was such a terrible decision for everyone else in college football, because the SEC was driving it, and they were very magnanimous about saying, hey, you guys are in. The Big 12 is going to get in, even though they're not even close to as good as we are. The Pac-12 is going to get in, even if you lose UCLA and USC. And so right now you'd be sitting there in the Pac-12 and you're Oregon going, well, okay, this is terrible. We just lost USC. We're not going to make as much money. But you know what? All we got to do is beat these other schools, which we can beat, and we're in the playoff. We can do this, right? Kind of like the way Gonzaga can just win the Western, can recruit lottery picks every year because they have a path to the Final Four. It doesn't matter that they're in the West Coast Conference or they're a small Jesuit school. They have a path. When you get rid of that path, now you have to hope that under your plan, the SEC and Big Ten say, hey, we want to be partners with all the rest of you. They may not. They may sit there and say, we're going to go 20 each. You're in or you're out, and Notre Dame has to jump, and Clemson's got to find a way out of their thing or something like that. So it's just very, very unknown and very uncertain, and I don't think anyone in college athletics has the chess pieces designed out far enough to know exactly how it's going to be. But this, people will be left behind. Good programs with lots of fans are going to be left behind, and it's happened in the past. With teams, and it's going to happen in the future. And if you really love all of college football, it's a fairly depressing time, even though we're going to end up with more good games and things like that. You don't really want to see a, you know, let's say a Washington State just get left out in the cold. It's like they got fans and they're fun to watch sometimes, and they you want that hope that they can be good. People are going to get left behind.
Dan Wetzel here on the Rich Eisen Show. Last one for you, sir. I'm going to go a little bit more deeper, arcane, and then a moment for that is a little bit, I guess, for me. How does the scheduling work in the Big Ten now? I mean, does that mean, like, does Michigan have to play UCLA, USC, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State every year with Wisconsin and Iowa thrown in? I mean, how is this going to work? Now that USC, UCLA is here, you got West Coast trips, right? I mean, like, that's going to be significant. Yeah. When do you make them? You know, the USC gets to, you know, let's just say USC goes to both Ohio State and Michigan. Let's just throw that out there. But Ohio State, you know, Michigan gets USC in September when it's real nice, but Ohio State gets them in November where, you know, kids from Rancho Cucamonga, like, you know, Ohio State's current quarterback, might have to put their hands in a fanny pack to keep them warm, you know? That was a shot I just made at Ohio State, yes.
You want to be the parka salesman to USC Athletics.
Yeah. There will now be winter clothing that USC might not need in previous years. But how does it work? What are you hearing?
Well, they will probably play 9 games. They'll have 3. So let's take your beloved Michigan.
Yes.
Right? You want to have your 3 rivalry games that you must play every year because you have to have Michigan play Ohio State, right?
You have to have
Michigan play Michigan State.
Correct.
And maybe they play Minnesota because they got that little brown jug trophy or somebody else, whatever it is. And then you cycle through the rest of the teams and you should be able to get to everybody home and away. So you would maybe play a USC every other year, and every 4 years you would either travel there or you would travel there. So you play home and away, but you could stack it up that way. So there is a way to kind of cycle it through where you get to play everybody fairly often, but you do not lose the big television draws and the hardcore rivalries that you need, such as, like, there's no way you're not having Michigan and Ohio State play every year because they get 10. That's the biggest game of the year. They get 10 million people to watch. So mm-hmm. We're not expanding to lose 10 million person games. We're expanding to get more of them. But for UCLA and USC, extremely challenging. Lane Kiffin the other day was talking. I remember he coached USC.
Yep.
And he talked about when they would go play Notre Dame every other year. And it was a big deal of when do you leave because you got to get acclimated. And so they would leave on Thursdays for a Saturday game and get in early. And it's a grind. And they would always play that thing in the middle of the season. They would play at Notre Dame in mid-October when the game's in L.A. They do it at the end of the year. Now you're going to have to do that like week after week after week because, you know, there's certainly 2 road games in a row is not uncommon. So you might be USC or UCLA saying, hey, we're going to fly to Illinois and we're going to come back and then we're going to go play over at Rutgers the next week and we got to go. So it's the travel for USC football and UCLA football is enormous. And same thing for obviously not just basketball, which people will care about. Those are long road trips and all that, and you're going against time zones. But then how'd you like to be a baseball team or a softball team or a soccer team? You signed to play at UCLA. You think you're playing in warm weather, not like a winter game, a spring baseball game in East Lansing. You were signing up for something else. So for these non-revenue sports, it's even harder. They'll make it work for football, but it will be a challenge. As you see in the NFL, you know, when you're going west to east, it's a challenge for that team in the West. Well, it's a perpetual challenge now for UCLA and USC competitively.
Dan, thanks for the time, man. Look for my call as the season approaches more. Thanks for the 2 cents. Greatly appreciate it.
Anytime, Rich. Talk to you soon.
Right back at you. Dan Wetzel, one of the best and finest right here on the Rich Eisen Show from Yahoo Sports. Let us take a break. Be on time, relatively, for Jason McCourty, about to join the Good Morning Football breakfast table, but he will join our program next on The Rich Eisen Show. Having just spoken with Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports about the college football world and diving into him, his knowledge about that world, and the Big Ten scheduling that's coming, I'm going to say something that definitely backs up the sentiment from so many other Big Ten fans that Michigan Wolverine alums like myself are arrogant and put our program on a pedestal. I know, TJ, what I'm about to say will upset Penn State country where you're from. I get it. But with all of the additions with UCLA and USC and Dan Wetzel saying, well, they're not going to take away rivalry games with the additions of these two new teams. The whole idea is to create more watchable games, and they're not going to take away the rivalry games. So you're going to still have those, and then you'll figure out what he said. They'll still play 9 games, but they're not going to take away the rivalry games. Name me another Big Ten rivalry game that does not include Michigan. Name me one. Name me one.
Well, Iowa State.
Oh, they're not. Iowa State's not in the Big Ten. Iowa State's not a Big Ten team.
Ohio State.
Oh yeah, the rich history of that.
I mean, it
doesn't have the 100-year history like Michigan.
Who's Wisconsin's rival?
Great. Ask them. You know who it is? Michigan. Name the one. Ask any Badger the one team they want to beat the most in the Big Ten. Us. Name Michigan State. Us. Name Ohio State. Us. Now, got broad shoulders, but now UCLA coming in, USC coming in. Oh, you want to see USC play who? Penn State. Oh, those great USC Penn State matchups, right?
No, you're going to want to see them play Michigan.
There's controversy where USC beat us on a phantom touchdown in a Rose Bowl during the bowl years. So it's just going to be another layer of got to play Michigan, but Michigan's irrelevant. I hear that all the time. I just want to know. That's why I want to know. How are we going to schedule these things? Michigan, UCLA.
I was out of Michigan, USC, Rose Bowl, which was amazing.
They were great.
And it was one
They're
of the best
always
games
intense
ever
games. It was my last year, Bo's last game as coach of Michigan. I covered it. Junior Seau was literally everywhere on the field that day. So I just want to know, what's the scheduling going to be? And how are you going to balance it out?
Yeah.
And how are you going to keep complaining about it?
Well, I still have this program for it. Trust me, I still have this platform, and I'll use it. But I'm just trying to spit truth.
I'm Go Blue.
Hey, right.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Jason McCourty is now going to sit at the breakfast table of the... Wait a minute, I've got the notes for this interview, the Emmy Award winning show, Good Morning Football. I'm aware of that. We lost, but it's an outstanding program, as you know.
And yes. NFL Network family. Yes.
Well, no. I, as you know, the number of times that I have said over and over again that hosting NFL Total Access for a decade, that there's going to be another 10-pole show. I'd love for more 10-pole shows to show up on NFL Network, and Good Morning Football has become one, not just a tentpole for NFL Network, but for the entire industry in the morning. And Jamie Erdahl, formerly of CBS, is now going to be taking that spot that Kay Adams has been sitting in. And Jason McCourty joins the breakfast table on Monday. So I am thrilled to have here on the Rich Eisen Show, I guess sort of as an entry interview into NFL Network, is none other than Jason McCourty. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited. It's a great opportunity to be transitioning out of football into a great role like Good Morning Football.
So, how are you getting ready to do this thing, Jason? You ready to wake up in the morning? What's your normal time? You hit the alarm. What's the normal time you get your wake up?
Man, I got 3 young kids, so I'm usually up by like 6:30, 7 o'clock on the usual. So now with Good Morning Football, I'll have to be up around 4:30. So yep. I've never been much of a coffee drinker, but that may have to change in the near future.
Jason, I'll just let you know right now. I never used to be much of a coffee drinker, but I became one. I've got my annual physical sharing coming up after this program. I am doing this entire show with no food and no caffeine, and I am freaking out. I'm not lying to you right now. I'm losing my mind. So you don't drink coffee?
Never had a cup. it just doesn't taste good to me, so I've never gotten into it.
So even in your tenure with the Patriots, you never had a Dunkin'? I mean, how did that ever happen? You never had one of them?
Never had a Dunkin', but I'm a big donut guy, so I'll definitely stop by and grab vanilla frosted or strawberry frosted. The sprinkles are optional. They're not that important of a piece, but I've definitely had my fair share of donuts over the years being there.
All right. Jason McCourty getting ready to join the breakfast table. That'll be a lot of fun. And you know, you're joining an outstandingly talented crew. Outstandingly talented. You're getting a good spot, Jason. You really are. You know, congratulations on that. And you got Kyle Brandt's Angry Runs. You got all that coming up. Are you going to have your own sort of segment? You got something like that cooked up, Jason? What do you got?
Time will tell. So I'm looking forward to bringing those 13 years of one year winning a Super Bowl, another year going 0-16. So that's a plethora of knowledge of how to do it and how not to do it. So we definitely can probably pull that into a segment somehow.
Wait a minute. So did you go from 0-16 to winning a Super Bowl? Did that happen?
In that exact order. Lost the last game in January, signed, got traded to the Patriots in March, and by February was hoisting the Lombardi Trophy.
Damn, that is a totally different ball of wax. Oh my gosh! All right, so now that you're out, tell me every secret of Bill Belichick. Starting now, go for it. What do you got?
I wish I knew. So I guess his biggest secret is that somehow he finds a way to keep winning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so help me. Why doesn't he name coordinators? Can you help me with that one, Jason? Did you see yesterday he finally put titles to the new coaches' names and none of them are coordinators? Like, can you give me any insight on that at all, Jason?
I did see that. I know for my 3 years being there, like, title never mattered. So I think for him, I couldn't tell you exactly why the press releases go out and they don't have anything, but for when you're in the building, there's always going to be a consistent person in front of the room talking to you, whether it's Bill standing up in front of the squad meeting, whether there's been times that he's been the same person to stand up in the defensive meeting rooms, or whether it's Steve or Mayo or whoever's going to be standing in front of the room on the offensive side of the ball. The one thing you knew as a player when you walked in, you knew who was going to be standing in front of you. You knew what the plan was going to be each and every week, and you knew what you needed to do to execute it. So I think for him, he doesn't really care about those titles and things because he looks at it as it's more for other people to talk about, because within the building, it's just not important. Now, for those coaches, I don't know how they feel when you go to negotiate your next deal and the title's not there. That's a whole other side of the business that I wasn't privy to.
So, but everybody there in that building clearly knows, as they are arriving for training camp as a team next Tuesday, everyone knows who's calling the plays this year, right? Everyone does know that by now, right? Or no?
For sure they know on defense. I don't know if they know on offense. I'm sure Bill and those guys know, but I don't know if that's part of still figuring out what's next. I can't even pretend like my 3 years of experience in that building leads me to know the answer to that question. So I'd be lying if I said, oh, yeah, for sure they do know. But I think the one thing that those guys probably know walking into that building to start a training camp is that they're confident in that whatever the plan is going to put them in the best position to win.
And what does the Patriot way mean? I mean, the do-your-job way that might have been different in all the other stops from Tennessee, Cleveland, and Miami for you in your 13-year career, Jason McCourty. What's the difference?
You know what? I've never been big on the whole, like, Patriot way, as if, like, you walk in, they hand you a book of, like, do's and don'ts of what the Patriot way means.
Right.
For me, I know when I first got there, the one thing that I thought stood out to me was Bill's ability to put a roster together beyond just X's and O's. Like, when we walked in that locker room, the chemistry and the camaraderie that was built around players was huge. And I think there's something to that when a coach, Bill's coach/GM, when you can look at a team and you know, hey, I may need a receiver, but personality-wise, better experience-wise, who's the guy that's going to fit perfectly within my locker room? I think that helps build what you call the Patriot way. My years there, when you have guys, obviously everybody talks about Tom. We know how great he is and what he brings to the table. But when you have guys like Devin McCourty, Julian Edelman, Matthew Slater, these are guys that dictate what goes on in the building. And obviously it started with the Willie McGinnises and the Rodneys, the Lawyer Malloy, so many guys that came before them. But to me, that's more or less what it means. And then, as you know, when you've worked in the league for a while, organizations go through transition and different things at different times. The one thing about New England for the past 20 years has been consistency. Everybody within that building is moving in the same direction. There's no egos involved. There's no, well, why am I not doing this? Why is he doing that? Everybody knows what the goal is and the vehicle in which we all need to be in to get there.
New Breakfast Table member and regular of Good Morning Football, the Emmy Award-winning show on NFL Network, Jason McCourty here on the Rich Eisen Show. So Kyler Murray's new contract, what do you think that leads to in Arizona? What do you got for me? Winning championships or what? Like, because he's now the second highest paid per annual basis quarterback in the league. He's yet to win a game in the playoffs. He is clearly generationally talented, now generationally enriched. What do you think this leads to in Arizona, Jason?
I mean, I definitely at this point can't say championships just for the fact that they haven't done anything yet to show us that they have championship written all over them. And I think that's the odd thing about when it comes to contracts. I remember getting my second contract when I was in Tennessee, and our GM at the time was Rustin Webster, and I signed the deal and everything, and obviously excited, a ton of money, all of that, and Rustin comes up to me and he's just like, hey, the reason we paid you is because we want you to continue to do what you have done since you've been here. The leadership, the way you play, don't think that you have to do anything differently. We paid you because of who you are and how you approach this game, so continue to do those same things. So as I listened like yesterday of hearing everybody talk about Kyler Murray, and it's just like, well, now that they paid him, they expect him to be a leader. They complained about his body language. They want him to change that and this, that, and the third. And my thing is, you pay a guy, there's different ways you pay a guy. Sometimes you pay a guy because, hey, like, he's been doing this for X amount of years. A guy like Tom Brady, you pay him because you know his worth and you know what's going to happen. A guy like Kyler Murray, you know each year he's been in the NFL, he's improved. So you know for him, the ceiling is still high. But you can't pay a guy and expect, all right, now all of a sudden he's going to walk into the building and be a different person. He's going to all of a sudden walk in and be the most vocal guy in the building. No, he's going to continue to do the same things that he's done. So for me, I do think Arizona's going to continue to improve because as Kyler Murray goes. I just don't know if it breeds championship. The Rams are still a very good team in the NFC. I don't know if they've been able to build a roster to get over that hump. Obviously, DeAndre Hopkins is going to be missing games early on in the season, and they're going to need guys to step up. So I think you get to a point where this day and age, you need a quarterback to win, and there's a market value of what that position demands, and they had no choice but to pay him because he's a starting quarterback, and he's one of the better ones in the league.
I know my guy Chris Brockman across the way from here gets upset every single time. I'm like, does he deserve it? He absolutely deserves it because that's what the market pays him. It's his turn. And it was his turn. The question is how will he earn it? And I think you just kind of gave an assessment that's accurate. Like, we haven't seen Arizona finish strong yet since he and Cliff Kingsbury have been together. We haven't seen that big finish to top off what they were able to do in the first half of a season. And now their first half of this season's without DeAndre Hopkins. And the defending champs with their big, huge, you know, moon-sized championship rings they got last night. That's going to be a very tall order, Jason. Very tall.
Without a doubt. And the biggest challenge for the Rams is going to be how do you handle the success? You know, Super Bowl, you go, you got the parade, you get the rings, you got the stadium underneath, flip the top off on the ring, show that off as well. Now the season's about to start. What have you been doing all offseason? Have you been touring and showing off the rings and the trophy, or have you got right back to work, and are you as eager and as hungry to win the next one? I think that was always the challenge for me, actually being able to win one when I first got to New England and coming back in 2019, of having that same hunger and us going in the off season and really grinding. But at the same time, realizing that, hey, we played football all the way to the middle of February last year. Like, we're an old team. Like, we have to figure out ways to get that working, but still take care of our bodies. But, I mean, the Rams gave out money all offseason. They got Bobby Wagner there has joined, and they were able to re-sign Cooper Kupp. Aaron Donald even was able to give the coach some money as well. So there's no reason to believe that the Rams aren't going to be right there at the top of the conference this year.
All right, last one for you. This is a classic paparazzi question, and since you're now part of us, that world, I'll throw it to you. The one quarterback to win a game in 2022, okay, for this year, you've got to choose one quarterback to win a football game in a do-or-die contest. That quarterback is which? Who is that quarterback, Jason McCourty? Who do you have?
Josh Allen, Bills Mafia. And it pains me to say it after playing in the AFC East with New England and with Miami, but I think it's because of that is why I'm saying it. This guy has shown up in big moments, and he's just a monster. This guy can throw the ball all over the field, and he also can get the ball in the shotgun position, use the running back as a lead blocker, and he's shown his ability to score touchdowns running the ball in the red zone. But I think for me, watching Josh Allen develop, being in that division and seeing where he was as a young quarterback, being able to flash and make plays, but also making the mistakes and the interceptions and the fumbles, and to see how far he's grown and how much he's gotten better, and having a chance to be around him at a conference one offseason, man, this dude is special, and he's continued to show it. So for me, Josh Allen would be that one quarterback. I think the beauty about him is that when you hear the guys in Buffalo on that team talk about him, or you see him and Stephon Diggs do a touchdown celebration where they're both dancing, you see the way guys rally around him, and that's true leadership, because guys want to go out there and perform for him so that they can go in the presser on Monday and call him the best quarterback in the league.
Jason McCourty, thanks for the time. Look for more of my phone calls. Welcome to NFL Network, NFL Media Group. Congrats on the Good Morning Football gig, and let's do this again soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
Right back at you. That's Jason McCourty right here on the Rich Eisen Show. And in terms of Buffalo Bills, just in terms of Allen as well, you know you've reached mega superstar status when you're talking about the other quarterbacks you're facing and how those matchups are going to be must watch, must see. Takes two to tango, but those are the matchups you want to see. You know, back in the day, when's Brady playing Peyton Manning, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
How about this for the Buffalo Bills? First up against Stafford and the Rams, okay? In week three against Tua, week four against Lamar. Man, week six against Mahomes. Week six against Mahomes after a bye, week eight against Rodgers. Let's see if Deshaun's back week 11. Hey, man. The Bills and the Patriots are just going to be always terrific. Mac Jones there. Then in week 17, it's Joe Burrow. Come on now. At Cincinnati, Monday Night Football, the 2nd of January. Buffalo at Cincinnati. Back, just even like 3 years ago, Bills, Bengals. Is that must-see television? Like, get out of here. Now, for the next decade, you bet that's appointment television.
And then week 17 for the AFC East title. Man.
Potentially for the entire week 18, AFC. Week 18. I know you were having fun with that. Week 17 for the AFC title. That could be on the line. Oh, yeah.
AFC East, Mac Jones. I mean,
I know that.
Come on now.
I know that.
Top 10 quarterback.
And again, what Miami's doing with Tua, and obviously, as you know, the Jets have got me very excited. We'll see if Zach Wilson can be that plus the biscuit, but he didn't even stutter. Josh Allen, your Mandalorian quarterback. I don't blame him.
It's still Tom Brady. I mean, come on.
No, I know that. Obviously, in this day and age of needing a win. Let's go to Doug in Baltimore. I'll take this call. I'll take the bite at this apple before we throw it a break. What's up, Doug?
How you doing, Rich?
What's going on, buddy?
I'm okay. And let me give you the standard. I love you guys. I teach, and I try to schedule my schedule during the year to watch you guys
during
breaks and so forth during the season.
My gosh. Okay.
Now, That's it. Here's the pivot.
But
the arrogance that comes across, and it's so odd because you come on sometimes at the top of the hour with like your humble host, but yet, oh my gosh, the arrogance when it comes to your beloved Yankees, and especially today, your beloved University of Michigan.
Right.
Okay, let's start with Michigan, and we'll work our way back. How dare you say that the only rival that any school in the Big Ten has is with Michigan? Have you not heard of the old Oaken Bucket?
Oh, gosh. I've heard of the Oaken Bucket. I've heard of it. And I'm not even putting the brown jug up there either. I mean, I know that's his old school. And I know there's an old Oaken Bucket, that there are a lot of great rivalries. But when push comes to shove, though, Doug, were the United States sitting down and wanting to see the game, not just some regional rivalry? I'm not saying that there's no such thing as a rivalry in the Big Ten without Michigan. I'm talking about significant rivalries that need to be scheduled every year, not just because they're such a vast history, but because television executives demand it. And now USC's coming in. That's on Michigan's schedule damn near every year because of that. And you can't say the same thing about Michigan State. Gotta see USC take on even Ohio State. Seriously, that's what I'm saying.
Huh. Okay. I'm not sure I completely buy that.
Okay.
But all right, for the sake of the argument. But you don't think that people are going to want to see Ohio State and USC?
Now they would. Absolutely. I want to see that.
You don't think they wouldn't want to see that beforehand?
No, USC is far. Well, I mean, if it's not on the schedule that year, right, you can get through it. But I think there would be people saying, how are you not putting USC and Michigan together? You should say that about Ohio State too. Look, and I'll say this, so you're understanding. My head's not totally in the sand, and I'm not totally in the tank here. Ohio State is the most important Big Ten team there is right now. There is, because that's the one that has been battling for championships. Hopefully that tide got turned last year. I'm a little nervous that was just a one-off. But Ohio State's the one year in and year out over the last 10, 15 years that's the most important Big Ten team, because that's the one that can go in Alabama in a championship game and beat them. That's the one that's been able to go and to stare down the abyss of Clemson and beat them. And my school hasn't had that opportunity or put themselves in that spot.
And good Lord, you are making the most off of the one you got, the one this past year. I just wish you.
Well, I'm living my best life. By the way, Doug, that shelf life is lasting another few months, and I intend to have it.
Oh my God! Can I do the Yankee thing real quick? And I don't want Rockman to get on.
They're in Baltimore. Baltimore's in Yankee Stadium tonight. So tread lightly, sir.
We're going to get swept. I know that.
I don't know about that. They're playing well.
The Yankees right now are better than the Orioles. They've been that way for a while, but that doesn't mean that nothing else exists outside the Yankee orbit. Oh, my God.
Do we need to hug it out? Do I need to hug it out? Have I pissed you off, Doug? I'm sorry.
Doug is already my favorite caller of all time.
Well, wait a minute, Brockman. Let me tell this story real quick. I was in Boston in 2006, and a lady actually wanted me to take a picture with the 04 championship trophy. And I told her, ma'am, you got to be kidding. I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Why in the world would I pose behind a Red Sox championship trophy?
You don't need a piece
of
metal.
The great thing about being an Orioles fan, we can hate both of you.
I love it. Very good. We have to run, Doug, but please call back. Rearrange your schedule more, please. Thank you,
buddy.
Fantastic. I knew I'd piss people off, but I'm just speaking from the gut.
I think Doug and I need to be friends.
We'll take a break right here on the Rich Eisen Show. TJ's Big Ass Grab Bag still to come, as is Kevin Bacon and a What's More Likely with the NFL. So the last style bender, that's based on what?
It's based off a TV show I watched, The Avatar. It's a Nickelodeon show.
Okay.
And Aang, the main character, he had to realize his destiny as the Avatar by mastering all the four elements, which is water, earth, fire, and air, to realize his destiny. And for me, in this realm, I have to realize my destiny as the Avatar by mastering all the elements of the martial arts. So a lot of stuff in that show as well kind of correlates with my life with different characters. So even I got tough right here, I inked her up on my skin because, and I have a lot of other tattoos that relate to that show.
Okay.
And even this one, Naruto, is another anime I watched that really inspired me. So
yeah, you're wearing that shirt right now.
I just picked it up this morning, threw some, I dressed up nice.
Look, man. Again, I just you're so icy, I couldn't really tell everything
just
else.
Skate on me if you want.
I just
don't do it. You slip and fall.
You got a lot of good lines, man.
I don't want you to break your hip, my man.
Huh?
I don't want you to break your hip.
No, I'm not going to break my hip. I'm
you in shape? I see you.
I'm nimble for a 50-year-old, Israel. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm not going to get in the cage. I could not. I don't know if I could do that dance that you did.
I'll show you a little two-step real quick. That's all you need.
Is that it?
Yeah, two-step. Okay. Yeah.
Well, here's what we're going to do. Yeah. You know, we're going to keep you for a television only segment, and then you'll try and teach me
all
that
stuff. Two-step.
Yes, I'd like to do that. Okay. I think, you know, I limbered up. I did a workout yesterday.
You're right. How's the foot?
I have plantar fasciitis in my left foot. But you know, that's just neither here nor there.
Sounds fancy.
This is either going to be great or not so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Israel. What are we doing here right now? By the way, you've equipped me with some of your ice.
Got you dripped up.
Skating, I'm all skating on them. Okay, so what are we doing here?
All right, just a quick number, what I did.
Okay.
We're gonna be in the huddle and we're gonna count one, two, one, two, three, four. Now I want you to chest pop.
Okay.
Boom. And then step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're gonna grab your crutch right there.
Okay.
Cajonas,
okay.
And I want you to lean to the left.
Yes.
Back. Don't throw your hip out.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Yes.
And forward.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. And we can use this music?
Yeah.
Okay, what
song
is it?
Big Rules. Okay. Height to height.
Okay, hit it.
All right.
Okay, man.
You ready?
Yeah.
So we're in the huddle.
Huddle.
Right?
Yeah.
Wait for the beat to drop. Turn that up.
Turn it up, Mike. Come on now.
Ready?
Yeah.
And five, six.
Yeah.
Five, six, seven. Chest pop. Boom, forward, crunch.
Crunch, grab.
There we go. That's simple.
I'm gonna mop somebody out. Happy 33rd birthday to the great Israel Adesanya. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. NetSuite wants to make sure that you have proper visibility on everything you need to run your business, because poor visibility means you might still be relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software and NetSuite by Oracle saying, what are you doing? Essentially, to see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, because NetSuite's the number one cloud financial system that gives you the full picture of your business. So you can get visibility and control over your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more. NetSuite is everything you need all in one place, folks. You can automate your manual processes and close your book in no time, staying ahead of your competition in the process. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 31,000 businesses already use NetSuite, folks. So this summer, NetSuite's got a special financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/richradio. Head to netsuite.com/richradio for this special one-of-a-kind financing offer on the number one financial system for growing businesses. netsuite.com/richradio. TJ Jefferson,
yes,
hit
sir.
It. It's time for your big ass grab bag. Go for
what
it, sir.
What in the world is in that bag? What you got in that bag?
What do you have in that bag?
All right, well, like we always do at this time, fellas, kaboom, guess who stepped in the room. Listen, baseball, it's been on our minds all week, so I just figured I'd make this grab bag really quick and take a look into the second half of the MLB season. I'm just going to give you TJ's top five teams of the second half of the 2022 season, and this has been kind of easy, and I could have had a different team at five, but at five I'm gonna dig in the big ass grab bag. I'm gonna pull out the Seattle Mariners. They're 10-0 their last 10. They've got maybe the newest biggest star in baseball after the home run derby. I just kind of, you know, I'm taking a chance. I'm throwing the Mariners in there and saying maybe this run's going to keep going. The hot bats, people are now interested in them, I think. Hopefully this kid has put some more attention on Seattle.
I'm all on the Seattle boat this weekend as they take on the Houston Astros, who are now 2.5 behind the Yankees. Hopefully the Mariners will have 17 straight wins by the end of the weekend.
And I said they won their last 10. Excuse me. It's actually 14
in a row. What else you got over there?
My apologies. Coming in at number four, I'll be honest with you, 4-3. We could have flip-flopped. I'm putting the L.A. Dodgers in at number four.
What a catch. Did you see Mookie's catch last night?
They are crushing it right now. And they could easily be number one, especially considering the way they've been rolling. But I've got the Dodgers at four. Coming in at number three, I'm putting my New York Mets. Great news. DeGrom is scheduled to come back. Scherzer's back.
This team's balling. They're never out of any baseball games. And I feel really good about the New York Metropolitans.
Certainly with Juan Soto in that lineup on August 1st, right?
Yeah, you know, and I was really high on that, but now I'm really starting to, I'm not sure, Rich. If you're the Nationals, or do you really want to trade the guy to someone you're going to have to see that many times?
Well, you're going to, I mean, it depends on what not Bobby Axelrod does.
Yeah, I want to get my hopes up, but I don't want to get my hopes up. But I'm loving what the Mets are doing right now. Let's keep it rolling. Mm-hmm. Coming in at number two, the Houston Astros. This team, you say what you want about garbage cans and this, that, and the third, and tattoos
anymore,
and
man.
Shirts.
This is the real deal.
This team is amazing, man. And like, they put it on the Mets when we went and played them. And I was like, this Astros team is no joke. And obviously coming in at number one, the number one team heading into the second half of the season, the New York Yankees. I mean, blistering pace, probable AL MVP right there. We're looking at him and Aaron Judge. Giancarlo Stanton, by the way, I think that home run he hit in the All-Star game just landed. So I got the Yankees as my top team right now. I feel like this grab bag was pretty easy.
Well, they have the best record in the whole sport. That's maybe why you put them there, number one. But the Astros are a better team right now.
Right,
that's for
as
sure.
Of today, yeah.
That's for sure. The Astros are a better team. The Astros are only two back in the loss, 2.5 overall. And you got to keep an eye on them for sure. I mean, the Dodgers are the team getting Freddie Freeman. It was winning the World Series or bust. The Yankees are now in that category as well, thanks to their huge start that mm-hmm. July has totally cooled them off. And the Mets, I'm just curious to see what they do at the trade deadline. I'm curious to see what all five of these teams do at the trade deadline. You know, the Mets are right now, you know, only 2.5 in front of the Braves.
So fighting the Braves off all season.
Man, the Dodgers were up 5-0 last night, then coughed up the lead, and then put a 4 spot on the bottom of the 8th. Mookie Betts' catch last night.
He is really good at baseball. Take a look.
He's just good at everything he does.
Man.
Including pissing off Chris Brockman anytime his name gets
mentioned.
I mean, I get you.
It's not Mookie's fault.
I know.
But it's one man's fault, and I hate that man.
Chris, I know how I feel about the Jason Tatum thing, and he never played for me. So I can imagine how you're feeling.
Kevin Bacon's coming in studio. Don't go anywhere. Coming up.
This is the business we've chosen.
Well done.
That's for you, Chris.
Let's go to Al in Atlanta. He's been hanging on forever today. What's up, Al? How you been?
Morning, Rich.
Got about a couple minutes for you, Al. What's going on?
All right. I got a great subject for you for the Mattrel. But first, we got some business to handle with the future birthday boy. How you gonna put the Braves on there?
The Braves probably should have been 5, but then I looked at it, man. It was like, all right, these are the 5 best records. That's pretty simple. So I had to switch it up a little bit, make it somewhat interesting.
I do owe you this. I have to say congratulations to the Mets winning the NL East first half pennant. Sadly, there's a second half to play, and we all know what the Mets do.
You know what the old Mets did. This is a new Mets. You ain't seen these Mets before. All right, this is a completely
first half
different
pennant.
Team.
Is that going up in Citi Field? Is that where it's going? Okay. Very good.
As some may remember, I called in about 3 months ago and made a bet with you, Braves versus Mets.
Mm-hmm.
But we never solidified what we were actually betting on. Are we betting on the 19 games head-to-head, or are we betting on the full season?
I thought your bet was head-to-head. I thought that's what you'd said.
Oh, I mean, it's your choice. I made the bet. You get to choose the parameter.
I mean, you know, we might as well just go mano-a-mano then.
I like it. You got a one-game lead so far.
Yeah. Okay. Al, what else you got in your mind? Anything?
And the perfect natural, I feel, is the Braves' new first baseman, Matt Olson. It fits so well.
Okay.
We've never talked to Matt.
I've never talked to him. You should get him on.
Let's do it.
Certainly since he's being used as a comp for Rafael Devers. Thanks for the call, Al. Appreciate it. There you go.
I hate baseball.
And also, Rich,
why do you hate baseball?
I could have had the Braves in there, but I don't like the Braves. You know, that was personal.
It's your it's your big-ass grab bag, and sometimes it's only as large as just as you want it to be.
Yeah. You know.
Can't believe you're not. Do you want me to come over on the birthday tomorrow? You want me to bring Zan? I can bring Zan by.
Come where?
I don't know.
No one's ever been to TJ's crib.
Somebody's got to play ping pong ball.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you got to ping pong.
I mean, Brockman's been outside of the crib in the car, but he's never come up.
Kevin Bacon making his way to our studio, hour number three, with the star of City on a Hill and so much more. And then what's more likely, NFL style, coming up next.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.